Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League Show. I'm your host, Ben, and joining me here in our lovely, lovely League Express studio to review the week that's just been and gone, we're joined by three lovely, lovely people. Matthew Sadler's here. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Ben.
Matthew Shaw is here. Hi, Matthew.
I don't often get lovely.
And Doug Tosser, of course.
Yeah,
the lovely Doug Tosser. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. As well as looking back at round two of Super League, on this week's show, we'll also be previewing that big World Club Challenge match this weekend. We'll be joined by Phil Wilkinson later from the Wigan Evening Post to review that big match this weekend against the Sydney Roosters. And on top of the league, heading into round number three, and probably staying there after round three, Salford Red Devils, of course, and Paul Whiteside from The Devil in the Detail will be coming on later to discuss the Salford Red Devils. But we should start with the action from Thursday evening. Castleford against Hull. Doug, I'll come to you first. Castleford were good, I thought.
Yes, yeah, Castleford were great, weren't they? I mean, Hull probably a little bit unlucky in some ways, but, you know, the whole run goes on of defeats, and the pressure's growing all the time on Lee Radford, I guess. It's an interesting one.
It's a harsh situation here, because I don't think Hull necessarily played that bad on Thursday, Matt.
No, I felt a bit sorry for them, actually. I really don't think they're a million miles off. I think they're actually a lot closer than people are giving them credit for. I think if they were playing the majority of teams in Super League, they'd have probably won on Thursday. I just thought Cass were good, and that's that. It's,
yeah.
I think the best explanation of Hull's current situation is that James Clair incident, the disallowed try.
Mm.
He takes the kick, they push him into touch, he panics, he throws it in field, Minicello takes it, scores a try. They go back the video referee, and there's a little bit of his shirt touching the touchline, so it's disallowed. That doesn't happen if you're winning games. If they're not on that run, that gets given.
I think that could go down as the unluckiest moment of the week, couldn't it, for Hull. And actually, Hull had three tries disallowed by the video referee, so that just compounds the luck. I thought Jake Connor, when he scored and the try was disallowed for obstruction, probably the right decision, really, but desperately unlucky for Jake, because if I'm really honest about it, I don't think Liam Watts had any chance of getting to him, and I think he ran fairly conveniently into Joe Westerman and claimed the obstruction. I always tend to think when a player claims an obstruction, you probably shouldn't give it, you know, because it clearly looked as though he was playing for it, but you know, you couldn't say it was the wrong decision ultimately. But no, I think Hull will soon snap out of this run, and of course they don't have a game this weekend, so they've got time to lick their wounds.
And we're not mentioning any numbers about straight defeats or anything like that.
No, we better not.
It's not helpful.
We better not.
Yeah. But talking about Castleford, you obviously caught with Grant Millington after the game.
Yeah.
And he's right in what he says, you don't win the grand final in February. But Castleford are looking pretty good, aren't they?
They're doing what they need to do at this time of the year, I think. They've probably gone under the radar a bit. You know, defeating Catalans at home, given the results in round one with London winning and Salford winning, I think that probably went under the radar a bit. And I think the victory over Hull probably went under the radar a bit as well. But they won't mind that. They'll be quite happy. And the important thing for Castleford, as Millington rightly said in League Express, you win the games now, you get the points on the board. If you do have a bit of a sloppy run, or if you have a slip up, or you get an injury, it's then not a disaster because you've got the points on the board.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter when you get your points, does it?
No. The crucial thing for them, though, at the start of the season, Darryl Powell said that, you know, this was the year when Jake Truman had to step up to the plate. And in the two games they've had so far, he's definitely done that without Luke Gayle. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a massive test. You lose a player like Luke Gayle, who won the Albert Goldthorpe medal three times in a row, who won the Man of Steel. That's a massive loss, isn't it? And yet to be able to play and win, and for Truman to look as good as he's done, is a massive bonus for Castleford. And it really stands them in good stead, I think. And, you know, who knows when Luke will come back, but, you know, they look as though they're going to be able to survive and do well without him.
Paul McShane looks to have gone to another level as well.
Well, he's leading our Albert Goldthorpe medal table.
He's on my list of things to talk about.
Yes,
we've covered that now. I'll just tick that off my list of things to talk about.
Yeah.
Thought Luke was good on Sky, though, wasn't he? He wasn't too bad.
Luke was great. Yeah. It's great to see Sky having, you know, more players involved and talking about the game and showing that they, you know, can talk about it really well and in an interesting way.
There's four teams with 100% records now after two games. Castleford's one of them. Another team is Warrington. A good win over Hull KR. Winning ugly, would you say? Or it wasn't as It was a bit more of a grounding out result, that one, Doug.
I think so. I mean, Warrington, you know, they're sort of consistently pretty solid, aren't they, all the time, really? You know, they're minimums at a good level, which is a good sign as you're going forward. And, you know, two good wins so far this season and certainly a real threat, aren't they?
Not an easy win, though, against Hull KR, was it? And Hull KR lost their captain, Gerald Tompkins, with an unfortunate incident that, you know, that saw Blake Austin yellow carded. Fortunately, Blake Austin has escaped without any punishment from the RFL for that. It did look accidental, so I'm really quite pleased about that. But it wasn't easy for Warrington, and that game illustrated nicely the sort of general levelling up in standards in Super League this year. Because, you know, Hull KR had that great win against Hull very narrowly. They went to Warrington, and, you know, you might have thought they'd struggle a bit there, but they were competitive for the whole game. Mm. And, you know, if Tompkins hadn't had to leave the field in the first half, who knows what they might have achieved there.
I think he's out of hospital now, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Came out the following day.
I should also mention as well, you know, in this time of smartphones and people can take photographs and everything like that, that is a cracking photograph in League Express this week of Tom Lynham's try into the corner. There's literally a boy there being given a beer to celebrate that. But it's photographs like that, that's an amazing try there.
Thank you.
Hull KR okay, do you think?
I've got a few doubts over Hull KR, just long term. I think the spine. I don't know about you guys. I mean,
well, they're missing Quinlan
on Lund,
and Lund, which is a big concern for me. Yeah,
I'm not convinced that Josh Drinkwater and Danny Maguire will complement each other. Good players in their own right. Will they strike a good core together?
When it comes to Lund, I mean, it's difficult to know how long Sean Lund is going to be out for.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had this terribly serious illness, and you don't quite know what it takes out of him, both physically and mentally. I noticed the other day an article about a hooker in Australia who is serving behind a bar at the moment because he doesn't have a contract, and that's James Segayaro. I just think, wow, he was pretty good when he came to Leeds a couple of years ago. And if anybody's looking for a hooker, I think he'd be pretty good.
But would you want to, with him, given what he did at Leeds, would you want to take him? Because if I was signing him, if I was in charge of the club, I'd be worried. Well, the minute he gets a contract over there, he'll be able to do everything in his power to go and just leave the country, and that'll be that.
There's always that possibility, isn't it? But he's a very good player.
Oh, that's absolutely.
You know, and
absolutely.
If you're looking for a good hooker, I thought he was outstanding when he came to Leeds, and you know. It was just unfortunate he got homesick and wanted to go back. But the thing about Hull KR, they've got a big game this Sunday against London Broncos at home. If they win that one, they're four out of six then, aren't they? And that's going to be a real good start for them. Yeah.
Let's talk about one of the other teams who've on a 100% record, and that's St Helens. Close game, though, Doug, at Wakefield.
Very close, yeah.
And we nearly got golden point. What a time to be alive, Doug.
Yeah. I'd have hated it because I don't like the golden point. But yeah, I mean, but I guess you could also say that that's a sign of a good team, you know, that they can edge and grind out a win in a situation that's difficult for them. But, you know, good sign for Wakefield that they pushed them so close.
It's what we're saying there about the competition more generally and Wakefield there.
Well, Wakefield very often do play well against St Helens. St Helens have traditionally been, you know, a team that Wakefield... going back many years, actually, but you know, Wakefield have often had some great results against them. But you know, I think Wakefield are still, you know, they've been left at the gate a little bit, haven't they, at the start of the season, 0 out of 2. Danny Brough still settling in, still trying to control his temperament. I mean,
still getting sin-binned.
You know, people say when they played at London, he got sin-binned, and it wasn't him; it was the wrong. You know, it was a wrong call by the referee, but the referee turned round and saw him and just assumed it was him.
He was mouthing off as he was leaving.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's got to get that aspect of his game under control. And Chris Chester made that absolutely clear after the game. Whether that was why they lost, I doubt it, because actually Brough did some great things in the game when he was on the field. So, you know, and Tom Johnson scoring two tries again for Wakefield, two great tries, actually, I thought. Yeah. So, you know, I think Wakefield have a lot to look forward to. And hopefully in the near future we're going to find something out about their stadium situation as well, which is long overdue, isn't it?
Very pretty on the eye, the tries Wakefield did score, though.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to make the point, I think the tries in general have been pretty. this season. I mean, London's tried, I know they got nilled on Sunday, I'm sure we'll come on to them in a minute, but the tries against Wakefield round one were fantastic.
They were.
Salford have been great with the ball. I think there's genuinely been some really, really good tries.
We'll come back to the final team out the four with 100% records later, because we have got Paul Whiteside coming on from the Devil in the Detail, because it is Salford, everyone. Let's talk about Saturday's match in the south of France. Catalans off the mark. All eyes on Sam Tompkins, and he didn't disappoint.
No. I thought Sam Tompkins was excellent, and there were a lot of Catalans players who played well as well. I think and Huddersfield, actually, I thought Huddersfield were probably as good as you could expect them to be, given how they've been struggling. Daniel McIntosh, I thought, had a great game for them. You know, Matt Frawley is still settling in, scored a good early try. And look to be slowly, you know, getting to know his teammates. But you know, they've had so many injuries at Huddersfield that it's difficult for them. But you know, just coming back to Catalans, I thought Matt Whitley had an absolutely great game, which was sort of exemplified when he stole the ball from Joe Wardle and created that great try for, who was it, Tierney, I think, wasn't it, just before half time. You know, I think Whitley's been a great signing for Catalan so far.
Back on Huddersfield, though, on the injuries, there's more news as well of injuries following that game. When do we think Huddersfield are going to be back to some level of normality?
Well, they're a while off. I think you're looking at, and this is without them getting any more injuries, you're probably looking at a month until they're down to a manageable injury list, which is a concern. They always seem to start slow for whatever reason. I think it's out of the control this year, but when was the last time Huddersfield had a good start to the season? It's been a while, hasn't it?
Well, let's talk about the Friday night game on Sky. Wigan against Leeds. Wigan now on zero. Yay. we should say, speaking of that points deduction, they are appealing.
They are indeed.
Points deduction. What do we make of that game? Firstly, from a Wigan perspective, Doug, I thought they were pretty good, to be honest.
Yeah, another good, solid performance and getting that win, which is all important for them. You know, particularly after the first weekend, they're off and running now, and obviously big things coming up this weekend, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But yeah, it was a good, solid all-round performance. From Leeds' point of view, another game of concern, really, I guess.
And Matthew, you were talking about the fact that Leeds haven't been getting offloading any players recently. It's all been inbound. That's changed in recent days. I mean, I thought Leeds weren't too bad on Friday.
I did.
Were they?
If I'm honest, me and Martin had this discussion earlier in the week. I thought it was the worst quality game I'd seen this season. I know Martin thinks otherwise. I wasn't that impressed with Wigan. I thought they were okay. But no more. I thought Leeds were with the ball, so poor.
It was always the final pass, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you don't. I'm comparing it to what I've seen in Super League from the other teams, and they're nowhere near.
Well, just to quote a statistic here: Leeds set completion 56%. That's fine. Wigan 76%, which isn't great. That won't be good enough to beat the Roosters on Sunday. But the really key statistic, though, from this game, is that Wigan had 20 kicks and they had 9 retained kicks. In other words, kicks that where they got possession back. And most of those came from George Williams. And I thought George Williams was absolutely outstanding, particularly his short kicking game. And I think he's already demonstrating the advantage of having Adrian Lamb, who's a halfback himself, as the head coach at Wigan. You know, I think Lamb will inspire confidence in Williams, and I think it's just great to see. And, you know, if it hadn't been for George Williams, I'm not sure that Wigan would have won, actually, if I'm really honest about it.
It's a huge year for George Williams. You know, since he was 19.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been tipped for really, really,
really
high.
Big things.
Now, look, he's had a good career, but individually, I don't think he's hit the heights that people were probably expecting of him so far. And people have said, you know, he's had the shackles put on him. He's not been given that chance to express himself. He's one of these players that needs to play what he sees in front of him. And Sean Wayne maybe didn't restrict that a little bit. Adrian Lamb's not going to do that to him. He's going to be given a bit more freedom. So Williams has to step up to the plate. Now, I didn't think he did do against St. Helens, but he was probably, for me, probably one of the two best players on the pitch Wigan Leeds, and like Martin said, his short kicking game's phenomenal. That is his undoubted strength for me.
And he took his try brilliantly didn't he? Yes. You know, that was a great try that he scored that not many other players would have scored, in my view.
No,
if I'm really honest about it.
Now we'll come back to Wigan in a second or two, but for Leeds next, they're playing on Sunday against Salford. That's suddenly turned into a massively important game.
Yeah. I think that's massive. Again, just looking at Leeds, they actually missed fewer tackles than Wigan last Friday night. And I pointed out last week that the four substitutes for Leeds in their first game at Warrington didn't miss a single tackle between them. And even on Friday night, Aledzki and Donaldson were on the bench. They made 23 tackles, 27 tackles respectively, but missed none. You know, that's not bad for two guys coming off the bench. Petteru was in the starting lineup this week, but he also didn't miss a tackle. And there are some positive things coming out of Leeds, and I think there'll be a big challenge for Salford this weekend. What I hope is that Salford managed to get a crowd bigger than 5,000. You know, for what's really a big game.
The whole thing with Leeds is strange, though, like Singleton being Joel Reg to Fev.
I find that inexplicable.
I just don't I hate Joel Reg. You know how much I hate Joel
Reg. So do I.
But why? I don't even understand why they'd send Singleton on Joel Reg. I mean, he was captain in Leeds for part of last year. He was on the bench the week before and did okay. I don't get it. I really, really don't get it. It baffles me. And, you know, we're hearing the happy for Cuthbertson to go, the happy for Parcell to go, the happy for Mullally to go.
Isn't this just a reflection on last season and the need for
but why are they doing it now?
Well,
season started. Yeah.
You know? It seems disruptive to me. You know, you want all your players on side, don't you? You want a strong team spirit. But if you're sort of saying to players, you know, we'll send you to here, there and everywhere on dual reg when players are sort of established first-grade players. You know, if that were me they were doing that to, I'd feel pretty unhappy. So I can only imagine that players who it's happening to feel that way too. Who knows? Maybe they love it, you know, but
I highly doubt it.
So do I.
And the players that they're going to, they hate it because the part-time players who often get appearance fees.
Yeah.
And they're not getting it because some fella from Super League is coming for one game and probably going again.
Absolutely.
I won't use the phrase transitional season just yet, but
it can't be. When you sign like they have, there's no excuses. But I went back, I think I said it last week, Jamie Peacock said on that Challenge Cup game, there are players in this squad that aren't Leeds Rhinos players. And he wasn't talking about Ryan Hall and Joel Moon when he said that. They have left. And they got rid of Mitch Garbutt and Jimmy Kynos. Mitch Garbutt's been phenomenal for Hull KR.
Kynos had a good start as well.
Yeah.
You wonder who's making the decisions? Is it David Ferner or is it Kevin Sinfield? You know, it's an interesting one because Kevin's the director of rugby there and obviously he's got massive playing experience, but a fairly limited, you know, managerial experience, really. Mm. And you wonder how that's working. You know, if they score 50 points at Salford this week, we'll all say it's working great, won't we? But
you can't see it, though, can you?
No, but they've got a knack of sort of bouncing back just when you write them off, Leeds,
yes,
haven't they?
That's true. If I were Salford, I'd be very, very cautious about this game.
Oh, absolutely. But if you're asking me to tip it right now, I'll be going Salford.
So would I, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We'll talk about Salford in a bit more detail shortly. But before that, back to Wigan. Big game this weekend against the Sydney Roosters in the World Club Challenge. And on Monday, I caught up with the sports editor from the Wigan Evening Post and Observer. Here's Phil Wilkinson.
So, Phil, a big thank you for joining us. Big, big game this weekend. We're recording this on Monday. You've been down today for a bit of a press conference and that kind of thing. What's the mood in the camp like?
Very good. This is the first time I've heard them mention the World Club Challenge. They had the blinkers on for the games against St Helens and Leeds, and you can see why. You know, they had a new coach coming in and two huge Super League games to start the season. But today it was all very much on this Sydney Roosters and the week's building. They've got, I think they've got a day off tomorrow, but then when they're in, it's more media commitments Wednesday, an official launch with the Sydney Roosters on Thursday. So it's all building good to what should be an absolute cracking game on Sunday.
And on the pitch, like you say, I mean, the St Helens game is one thing, but the performance on Friday night against Leeds, that must have been really encouraging for Adrian Lambert.
Yeah, I think it was encouraging is the right word. It was satisfying as well, another word. But at the same time, I think all the words coming out of it today was that if they played like that against the Sydney Roosters, they're not going to win. You know, they need to be tidier than that. The defence needs to be better. I think even in that opening game against St Helens, I think anyone would say St Helens were 9 out of 10. They were the better team. But you look at the tries they scored and they weren't that. You know, there was a couple of soft tries in there, same against Leeds as well. So I think the defence will be the one area they really need to try and fix up this week.
And obviously as well, I mean, I was, for the St Helens game, I was impressed by Zach Hardacre, and I was impressed again against Leeds too, given all the troubles and that kind of thing. His start to the season must be encouraging as well.
It is, and it's good, isn't it, that there's no headaches for, you know, I mean, nobody, it's not even an issue, is it? We're not even thinking, is that going to turn up, or is he going to be a problem, is he going to fit in? There's not even a problem there, you know. He was one of the Wigan's best against St Helens. Another off-season signing, Joe Bullitt, was probably up there as well, and again against Leeds. And as you said, he performed well. He's so solid at the back, and they'll need him. They will need him, not only for what he can do on the field, but that experience too. It's still quite a young side. People forget, even though they've won grand finals, and players like Oliver Gildart, for example, he's won a World Cup Challenge. They're still young men. And so, you know, the experience that Zach Hardacre will bring against such a talented Sydney Roosters squad, I think, will be crucial.
The marketing drive's in full swing now, and I think we're expecting a big crowd at the DW this weekend.
Do you know what? I almost admire Wigan, really, for saying from the very outset they want a capacity crowd, because I think they were disappointed with the 17,000 they got against the Cronulla Sharks a couple of years ago. Sydney Roosters, a bigger draw, a bigger name, some bigger stars in that side as well. They want to get 25,000, you know, and it would be great if they do. For me, it's a little bit disappointing that they've got other games on that day. You know, I mean, even, you know, the Swinton chairman, Andy Mazey, tweeted me today and said it's a shame he can't get to the game because they're playing that afternoon. So it's a shame that it's not like the Challenge Cup final, where even if you just protect that day, you know, just to kind of give it a bit more kudos and gravitas. But you know, that aside, we're going to work in overtime to get a big crowd on, just build up some interest in this, in the World Club Challenge. It's going to be I really do think it's going to be a great game.
And just before you go, Phil, just a quick plug for your work and WiganToday.net. Sure. And The Observer and The Evening Post and all that. I mean, where can people keep abreast of the previews and interviews heading into this one, as well as all the reaction to the result?
Oh, mate, on Friday, my editor said, how many extra pages do you want in The Observer? And it's one of those, isn't it? You know, you want to do it proud. It's busy, but it's good busy. Honestly, I couldn't be... you know, ask me at 9 o'clock tonight. I might disagree with this, with what I'm about to say now. But you couldn't ask for to be busier for any other reason. It's just fantastic, and we'll be hammering it all week. I think we've got a couple of pullouts this week for the World Cup Challenge in the Wigan Post. I think I've got 7 or 8 pages in the Observer tomorrow, and of course the Wigan Today website. We'll be loading that as well.
Phil Wilkinson there from the Wigan Evening Post and Observer. How big is this game, the World Club Challenge, generally? Not the Sydney Roosters Wigan match, but just generally, Doug?
Hopefully a huge game, you know. You know, the season started pretty positively in terms of entertainment, and crowds are looking quite good. So, you know, a big crowd for this would be setting out a real statement, I think, for going forward, you know. And it's the prime match that you could have, isn't it? You know, the champions of Europe versus the champions of Australia. It's a global phenomenon.
It's big from our point of view, but it's not quite as big from the NRL's point of view, is it? I know, you know, we never quite know whether the World Club Challenge is going to happen. Last year, Melbourne Storm didn't seem interested in it until Leeds agreed to go down there and got beaten quite comfortably. But the NRL almost seems to present it as a pre-season trial match and not much more. I don't know why they do that, why they're so insular and parochial. You know, obviously Wigan made great efforts to get the game on this year. Remember a few years ago it was a World Club Series, 3 teams coming over from Australia. That didn't last long. Then it became 2 teams.
It's bigger than that, wasn't it, in the first season? Didn't everyone come over?
Well, in 1997. Yeah, 1997. But, you know, that was a very optimistic sort of event, I think. But, you know, so we never quite know where we are with this game. And, you know, Wigan, Ian Lenigan, of course, is very keen to develop it and expand it and make it bigger. But, you know, you need 2 to tango, don't you?
Without trying to sound like an internet cynic, but I share the belief of many of them. Is it the NRL protecting their status as the elite competition? Because their record in the World Club Challenge isn't as dominant as maybe they try and make NRL is over Super League, and if they treat it like a pre-season game, if they lose, they can sort of shrug their shoulders and go,
Well, they always do, don't they? It's, you know, they've always got excuses if they don't win.
Let's not forget that Sydney Roosters have already advertised themselves as world champions in America.
Yes, that was really weird, wasn't it? I can't understand what on earth they were playing.
Isn't this like in soccer where we're essentially South America, aren't we, in the World Cup Challenge, in the World Cup Championship, where it's for the European side,
it's like when, you know, in the UEFA Champions League, whoever wins it, they're the best team in Europe, but everyone claims they're the best team in the world. Well, not necessarily. And that's what the NRL are doing. Now, if Wigan haven't already been in touch with all the billboard holders in the Sydney area and have designed a world champions advertisement for if they beat Sydney, they're missing a trick.
They are, yes.
Missing a trick.
You ought to be their PR advisor, Matthew, I think.
There would be nothing better than to see Wigan boasting
rubbing their noses in it. Yes, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Well, it's a 7 o'clock kickoff, and that match will be live on Sky on Sunday, and a big, big good luck to Wigan in that one there. Back to Super League matters, and top of the league, Salford 24, London 0. On Monday, I caught up with Paul Whiteside from the Devil in the Detail podcast, because it has been quite a good start to the season, to say the least, for Salford. So let's hear what the mood is in God City.
It's been good. It's been exciting. I think sort of last season when Jackson Hastings and Joey Lussett came, along with a couple of other lads from Widnes, Greg Burkhead, Chamberlain, there was a change, really. I can remember going to Hull KR sort of last July, and we was absolutely lamped there. And I thought Ian Watson was going to get sacked. I did an interview after the game, and I felt really sad, because I thought this is the end now for him. And it wasn't. We brought a few players in, and we finished the season really well. We came top of the, if you can come top of the qualifiers. I mean, you don't get a trophy for it. But it was a good finish to the season. We turned things round, and we've carried that on into the 2019 season, really, that sort of buzz. And everybody sees Jackson Hastings. His on and off the field presence has been really good. And I think he sort of brought the supporters and the team and the club back together again. A lot of bridges have been built. I mean, I know I'm not saying we're far from through the woods at the moment. We're not got loads of money and that, but we're all doing our bit now. Supporters trust the squad build. It, that's great to see. Everybody's pulling in the right direction now, and I think that's rubbed off on the players and rubbed off on Ian. You know, Ian's a local lad, and we're all like sort of pulling in the same direction now, which is great to see. And obviously, the start of the season we've had at Huddersfield with an excellent result, and yesterday as well. So we know it's a long season. I mean, we play Leeds on Sunday, and that's going to be a massive game for us. That's a big step up. I know they've lost two matches, but they've still got some quality players, and that's going to be a really tough test for us on Sunday. But I think Ian mentioned it to me yesterday. We take each game as it comes. I know it's an old cliche, but just keep going and just see where we can go, see where this momentum takes us.
There's certainly nothing wrong, is there, with the first 17 that Ian Watson puts on paper. I mean, when you've got the likes of Niall Levels there, it's just a case of keeping them all fit, I suppose.
That's right. And if you look this season, we lost Ed Chamberlain early on. That was a bit of a blow. We've got Josh Wood to come back as well. We've also got Adam Walker, who's going to come in once his ban comes. So we've got three players there that are going to come back into the side as well. It's going to give us a big boost. And I think Joey Lussick's been a good signing as well. He came over with Jackson Hastings, and I've been so impressed with him. The minutes we're getting out of him, he's a real leader on the pitch, and he's give us a huge boost as well. And the spine of the side, you've got Mark Flanagan in there, and the guy I'd like to give a mention to is Greg Burke, who came on yesterday. And if you watch Greg Burke at Widnes, he was a prop forward there, but he played loose forward yesterday for us against London. And he's done really well in that position. He's showing a neat pair of hands, and he fills in really well for Mark Flanagan when he goes off. So we've got quite a durable squad, quite a mobile pack as well. We're not the biggest side in the world, but the way things are going now with the substitutions and the shot clock and things like this now, I don't think you can be that huge side anymore. You can't make wholesale changes in the game. So I think Ian's been focusing on that. And no, it's exciting times to be a supporter. I mean, it'll probably all come crashing down for us on Sunday against Leeds. But no, I think we're slowly building something, slowly but surely.
And and it's not just on the pitch, the supporters trust. They put on a bus every match day, bringing people to the ground, and lots of community work. And also the media presence and the social media stuff, that's all superb, isn't it? And you know, we saw with the away following at Huddersfield, and the attendance wasn't bad either on against London. It is all moving in the right direction on that side of things at the club.
It is. It's been this close season's been a breath of fresh air, because if you look back the last couple of seasons, it's all been negative things, hasn't it, in the press. And about us. Whereas this time we've got our heads down. The club seems to have really done well on the social media front. I mean, if you look at the Jackson Hastings video, I mean, that was quality, that when he made his announcement to stay. Just little things like that. And I know the coverage that we're getting, the Manchester Evening News is really good now. I mean, Adam Whiteside's done some good stuff. Adam's the media guy at the club. We've got Tom Bramwell, who's our reporter for the Evening News. So we've had some really good coverage in there. Supporters Trust, you mentioned there, they've done a great job. We've got two buses running now. And that, you know, to organise something like that in the short space of time that they did and actually get it up and running, that's just supporters that we've got, you know, day jobs, and they've done that in their own time, and it's great to see. And that's what Ian's been alluding to when he said about us being a community club and everyone pulling together. I mean, these things don't happen overnight, do you? You're not going to click your fingers and get 10,000 people going there. But the 3,000 we got yesterday, you know, some people might scoff at that, but for us, it's a move in the right direction. And if we can aim for 4,000 or 5,000 against Leeds and then keep doing that every week, who knows where we can go this season. So it's a good start, and we've just got to keep working hard. And, you know, everyone's got a smile on their face at the moment, and that's good to see.
And Paul, just before you go, you put the hours in as well. Lots of stuff on the media side at the club and the Supporters Trust and the Devil in the Detail podcast. Give us a plug for all the stuff you do at the moment, if you can remember all the links.
It's Opposite Radio on a Tuesday night. Me and Rob Parkinson and a couple of other lads do the Sports Zone show. I try and get as much Salford rugby in as I can. And obviously, we have to cover other sports as well, but we'll try and be a bit biased to Salford and get them. And Swinton Lions, we cover the Swinton Lions as well. We do the Devil in the Detail podcast. You can find that on, and I can't remember it,
SoundCloud.
But it's on Facebook, it's SoundCloud. And SoundCloud. That's the one, and there's a few others as well. It's a bit technical for me, but we do that. I do quite a bit of writing as well now for Supporters Trust and for the podcast as well. I do a match report for them. I've also got my own website. If you type my name in, Paul Whiteside Rugby League, you get all my reports and previews on there. So, no, I'll just do anything I can help the club with. You know, I love doing it. I really enjoy doing it. So, you know, I've been a self-supporter a very long time now, and I just love going to the matches and getting behind them. So yeah, that's about it. But yeah, if you can check the podcast out and give us a like and give us a follow, and you know, we love doing it, and we love helping talk as best we can.
So Paul Whiteside there from the Devil in the Detail podcast. Crowds, Martin, at Salford, that's the key, isn't it? But it's, and the trust is and the club is doing so much work to try and bring the crowds
that's
in.
That's right. Well, I thought the crowd of 3,246, you know, on Sunday wasn't a bad crowd, actually, given that London would have brought very few spectators. I would certainly hope that would be up to 5,000 on Sunday against Leeds, if not quite a bit more than that, if not six. And, you know, I think Salford deserve growing support, and I think they're going to get it. You know, there does seem to be a vibrancy about the club this season that we've not seen for quite a long time, as we were just hearing. And you know, I'm an old. I lived in Manchester many years ago, and used to go to Salford every week at the Willows. So I've got a soft spot for the club. But I'd also like to. I was just listening to Radio 5 Live the other day, and one of their presenters was talking about, oh, you know, she loves going down to the AJ Bell Stadium. I thought, great. And then she said to see Sales Sharks. So, you know, I'm very keen, you know, to get those BBC people, you know, booking a table and going down to Salford to the AJ Bell to see Salford Red Devils, never mind the other code. And, you know, I hope that Salford do manage to, you know, they're in a perfect position to do a lot for Rugby League's image there with the BBC so close by. You know, let's see them doing it.
They do a lot of things right. That, you know, their social media output is one of the best in,
better than most
in the competition. In Jackson Hastings, they've got the poster boy. You need to tap, you know, tap into a community. I think they do a lot right. I think one of the problems that they have is that a lot of the schools in the area aren't that interested in rugby, not in Salford, just not in Rugby League. You know, that's a mentality change that one rugby league club can't change. But that's something that needs to try.
They can
make an impact.
They're turning that round.
Yeah. If they can sort that out, you're onto a winner then. Because the minute you crack schools, and I think that's massive for any rugby
Absolutely.
League club in the area. So, good luck to them. I think they're doing a lot. They're doing a lot of things right at Salford. Like Martin says, they deserve success.
Well, as we said earlier, Salford against Leeds this weekend, and Hull KR against London. Not quite the blank weekend for Wigan, though, which is
it's a bit surprising to see those two games being played on the Sunday, same day as Wigan's game. Yeah,
but we talked about Salford there. We might as well move into the other big talking point from this past week's League Express, and that's the city next door, Manchester, and Manchester Rangers. And Martin, you really depressed me this week with that. Not your writing style. It's
no.
Very good,
well, it depresses me as well.
We're talking about Manchester Rangers, and just before we get into this, cards on the table, I've done a bit of volunteering for Manchester Rangers in the past, so I'm basically telling you all at home, I'm biased.
Well, I'm biased as well. I find it quite amazing that the Rugby Football League has turned down that application from Manchester Rangers to join League One. It seems a remarkably well structured and established club off the field. They've done great things on the field. They've been playing at the Manchester Regional Arena. It strikes me that Manchester, you know, the title of Manchester is a city title that we actually want in the game. You know, it's like it's a tremendous city, like Leeds, like Newcastle. It's great that we've got Newcastle these days playing rugby league. They put an application in. The RFL's sort of sent their guy to look it over, and he said it was a great application. So it went to the board of directors and was rejected. And not only that, but they wanted a bond of £500,000. That rings a bell, doesn't it? You know, just like the Catalans and the Toulouse and Toronto are being asked for to play in the Challenge Cup. What's this thing about £500,000? You know, what game are they playing, and why doesn't the RFL realise that that Manchester Rangers would have been a great asset to the competition?
I mean, what is the message as well? I mean, there is a thread on the Total RL forum which basically says no more new teams coming in.
Is there
a strategy for growth, do you feel? Because, you know, since this show started, we've been talking about Liverpool for obvious reasons. But, you know, we had Red Star Belgrade on, yep. And they basically said that probably it's going to be a bridge too far financially. Dublin, I think last week in the paper, there was the Irish Rugby League coming talking about the financials involved.
Yeah.
We all know about the rumblings of New York in the background. Mm-hmm. Is there a strategy for growth?
There doesn't seem to be, does there? And you know, Manchester, the travel costs of Manchester are negligible, aren't they, really? Because they're right in the middle. Yeah. They're right in the middle.
The thing I don't understand is I was always under the impression that when the league restructure came, Super League moved to 12, Championship went to 14, and it was going to be more. It was going to be 13, but then clubs pulled out. But it's 11. I always was under the impression that they were happy for it to be an odd number because they were bringing teams in. I was of the belief that they were, you know, they see 14 as the ideal. It can't really happen in Super League right now, but 14 in the Championship, it'd be 14 in League One. What club are they thinking of bringing in?
Is the problem, Doug, do you think League One? Because, and the premise of League One, in the fact that that's the bottom league, yeah, rather than part of a much wider pyramid, and therefore there is no promotion and relegation necessarily, and no ambition below League One.
Yeah, no, it's a different. I mean, it's very hard to create a pyramid in rugby league in the way that you've got one in football, just because of the sheer size of football. It means you've enough leagues to do it, whereas in rugby league you don't have really enough leagues below League One.
And there's not much difference between leagues at, you know, successive levels, is there, in football?
I mean, I think the problem with League One is, in terms of the expansion teams that I can see, is that these teams come in, but when they're in the league, they don't really get the amount of support. You know, there's a period that you have to go through to establish yourself, you know, do it the hard way without much money. They just don't seem to get the support needed to keep them afloat when they're in the league and give them that time to establish themselves and get competitive. You know, looks like Gloucestershire went out, Hemel Stags have gone out, all those kind of teams that really needed a bit of support didn't seem to get it when they needed it.
The other problem as well was back in 2015 when the league restructured again to the Super 8s, and they relegated five teams from the Championship to make the numbers up. Well, that completely meant that League One wasn't what it was there for at the time.
We saw Hemel go from a team who were third, fourth, fifth,
relatively successful to being
They couldn't compete with those teams that had come down.
The whole point of League One at the time was that it was a developing competition, effectively, and you'd have maybe one or two of the traditional clubs who would naturally fight at the top and would go back up, but it allowed those teams to develop, be competitive. When you take five teams down, that's not going
to
work.
I think the Super 8 structure had a lot to answer for, if I'm really honest. Thank goodness we've no longer got it. But I think the way it was introduced and then the way it operated was very negative for clubs in this, you know, for clubs who were expansion outpost clubs.
So what do you think the future brings then for expansion? Is it done or is it...
No, it can never be done, can it? Because if the game is successful, then what it will mean is that more people around the country and perhaps even beyond the country will want to come in and join the competitions. And, you know, you're going to find this year, for example, Newcastle Thunder, who are an expansion club themselves, will be, I think, competing for promotion from League One. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see Coventry Bears improving quite substantially. And hopefully even the West Wales Raiders will be playing better this year than they were last year.
They've
so
well.
Yeah, I think you know, I think the you know these clubs are all fairly realistic in their aims and ambition, but you know the key thing for the game is that eventually over time they're able to gain promotion, get into a higher league, and perhaps ultimately even Super League. I know that's a Newcastle Thunder aim. It's you know, but they're not putting any timescale on that, quite wisely, but, you know, Newcastle in Super League, wouldn't that be great?
And you can see that happening, really, can't you, with Newcastle, you know, because they've got their wherewithal,
they've got the infrastructure, yeah.
The important thing for me is that you don't measure an expansion club on on-field success straight away.
No, of course not.
I thought that was where Hemel probably let themselves down by relocating to Dewsbury. That wasn't what they were there to do. I understand why they did, because they wanted to be relatively competitive, but it wasn't what they were supposed to do. It's like with Toronto, people, you know, criticise, praise and whatever. You've got to look at what they're doing off the field. Now, I think you could argue, there's no Canadian players in the team. Okay. But they're building a base, aren't they? Now, in 10 years' time, if Toronto have no Canadian players and they've not developed any, I think that is a very, very fair criticism.
Sure.
Because the whole point was they were expanding the game in Canada, in North America. If there's no players coming through, then they're not doing the job, and that's a fair criticism. That's where you can look at Newcastle, look what they're doing in schools and with the junior clubs, and they're doing a fantastic job. And
that's the blueprint, isn't it, really?
Yeah, but that's the thing with Newcastle. Newcastle are developing the game in the region, and that's...
They're actually talking about developing new clubs, you know.
And that's the thing. That's why Newcastle are a fantastic story. Forget what they do on the field. If they go up, brilliant. But, you know, they're signing players to make sure they have a strong team, and sometimes you need a strong team to build strong.
Well, like Matt says, that takes time, though, and that's when you need the support from the governing body to allow that to happen over a period of
Newcastle,
time.
Newcastle, 10 years ago, I seem to remember, got 100 points put up them in a Challenge Cup game. You know, so it's developed, but it's 10 years.
Jason Payne was in that team.
Yeah, it's 10 years, I think. So that's the thing, you've got to give these expansion clubs time.
And strangely, Manchester Rangers, just to go back to them, they're kind of mirroring what Newcastle have done.
Course.
They've set up a school league, they've set up their own amateur junior club next door in Bellevue. Yeah.
Don't make me angry again.
Oh, sorry, I apologise. I'm just wrapping this segment up in a bow, that's all.
No, but you're right. Couldn't agree with you more.
But we wish everyone well at Manchester Rangers, and it was sad, but a good piece, I thought. But... yes.
Moving on. I hope you're pleased with upsetting everyone, Martin.
Yeah. I know. Anyway, we just talked about expansion there. We should talk about the League One season. That kicks off this weekend. Coventry against West Wales. Oldham against Workington. Big game, that one. And Whitehaven against Keighley. And I'd just like to just mention, I'll come to you for this, Doug, I think. Just like to mention Keighley on the brink.
Absolutely.
A couple of times over recent years, let's say.
I
spoke to Craig Lingard this week, and there is an air of positivity at last at the club.
Yeah,
it's good to have him in the competition. Points deduction or no points
deduction. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, a tough season ahead, obviously, with 12 points taken off, but, you know, they're approaching it in a very positive way, and it's great to see them survive, and it's good to see Mick O'Neill and Matt Smith back on board as well, because you know, they were real trailblazers at the time.
We published the squads, didn't we, for every League One team in League Express this week, and Keighley's squad doesn't look that bad, to be perfectly fair. You know, it looks competitive with most of the sides, but you've missed out what I think is the big game in League One this week, which is I won't jump the gun in that case.
I was going to combine it with the Championship bit, because obviously the Championship is also finished their round two.
Yeah.
Four sides left with 100% records. They go head to head this weekend. Sheffield, who topped the power rankings league this week, taking on the Bradford Bulls on Friday night. Big game, that one. And Toronto say they don't do much for the game. They're travelling to their new home of Kingston Park up in the northeast to take on Widnes. part of a double header because, as Martin alluded to before he interrupted him, Newcastle against Doncaster kicks off before that. And that match, the Toronto match on Sky, the Newcastle-Doncaster match in our league. It's, I mean, what do Toronto bring to...
No, nothing.
And Newcastle as well. I mean, yeah. Big weekend, though. big weekend ahead, though, in Championship and League One.
Yeah, and interesting for Newcastle as well, isn't it? Because they've invested very heavily over the winter. They brought some real quality players with Super League experience in. So a lot of pressure on them to produce the goods this time.
Are you excited about League One this year?
Yeah.
Always.
I've picked my dark horse that no one's giving anyone a prayer.
Because me and you presented the show together for 2 years on League One.
You presented it. Yeah, I talked to a lot of nonsense.
I feel like I need to ask you who your dark horse is for League One. Because that's what...
Huntsley.
Is it?
Yeah.
There's a glint in Gary Thornton's voice this week. When
I will make the bold prediction that Hunslet will gain promotion this season.
Wow.
There we go.
My horse isn't so dark as that. It might have been Workington.
It's not a dark horse.
No, a light horse.
Yeah. I'm not giving my prediction. But anyway, that's nearly it for this week's Total Rugby League show. But just a couple of matters arising. Happy retirement to Ryan Bailey. Six
Absolutely.
Grand Final medals and three World Challenge Cup medals. And
what was Martin about this, actually? I put a tweet out yesterday saying, you know, great player, great career. Probably got labelled as a grub because of the way he played, but could really play. You know, played for Great Britain, played for England. And I had people abuse me saying, you what? Average. Played it, lucky to play in a good team. Blah, blah, blah. I thought he was a great player. I think his career CV says that.
When I was a kid, you know, somebody once said to me, Neil Fox is lucky to play in a good team. Well, Neil Fox was it was a good team because Neil Fox was in it. I wouldn't necessarily say that about Ryan Bailey, but Ryan Bailey, all he has to do is to show his medals, all those medals that he's won, and that shows you what a good player he was. He doesn't need to say anything more, as far as I'm concerned.
But, you know, people were saying, you know, he only won those medals because of a team he's in. But he played four times for England and four times for Great Britain.
The fact is,
he was in the team.
Yeah.
And he deserved to be there, and he played well. And I think it's ridiculous to say that he's not been a really great player, and I'm sorry to see him retiring, but it obviously comes to all of us in the end.
Going into the fire service,
really?
Mm.
Mm. That's our second retirement announcement in 2 weeks. I feel like we should be getting a carriage clock, some kind of feature for that. Anyway, just a couple of other announcements to make. We criticised the RFL a bit there with the expansion discussion, but a new rugby league hub in Whitehaven, a £33 million investment, that's heading in the right direction.
Very much
in Cumbria. And also, just something picked up in your column, Martin, about the International Federation's press release about the game growing in Africa.
It's great, that, isn't it? I really do like that idea. I think, you know, I mean, soccer developed in Africa years ago, and you look at, you know, African nations now in football, you know, they're incredibly competitive. And, I mean, I think rugby league is harder to, you know, to expand in that sense. It's a tougher game to play and so on, harder to organise. But if we can get in there, I think, you know, there are a lot of athletes in Africa who'd contribute enormously. And already in Australia, there are quite a lot of immigrants to that country from various parts of Africa who are playing at, you know, just below NRL level, and some of them are just ready to burst through and make a really big name for themselves. And there is that Nines team at Africa United, which, you know, brings players from, you know, all the various, you know, heritage nations. And I just think Africa, if we could get it sorted out, would have so much to offer our game.
Look what happened with Jamaica. It's
absolutely.
Half the team is English-based, the other half is Jamaican-based. And that's if only there was a way of getting in rugby league in our melting pot cities that we've got here in the UK, like Manchester and Liverpool. And
yeah, I wonder how it could be done. Yeah, strange, isn't it?
TotalRL.com, the place to go for all the latest rugby league news. Any bits of housekeeping from you, for anything we should be looking out for in our various publications?
Rugby League World out a week on Friday. If you like your international tidbits, then Rugby League World is the place. Dash Hope is just, I don't know where he finds the stories from. I read a story about the Christmas Islands and Rugby League in the Christmas Islands. I didn't even know that place existed.
doesn't snow there either.
No, he just, I don't know why.
Advertising, like the never-ending story.
He does.
I think he's just angling for a free trip to all those places.
Well, me,
I think we ought to send him there.
He had one on Chile. Chile, you ever knew?
Well, they win the World Cup qualification tournament.
They were in
Jacksonville.
Yep,
I think
they were.
Anything in League Express next week?
Well, it's the World Club Challenge, isn't it, in Monday's issue. I'm a bit frustrated that they're kicking off at 7 o'clock, which isn't a great time for us, actually, because of our printing time. But, you know, we'll get full coverage of that game and full coverage of the opening weekend of the League One season. So we'll see whether, you know, how all these teams do. Will Newcastle beat Doncaster and... you know, put the first marker down for promotion, or will the Dons under Richard Horne frustrate them at the first hurdle? So it's going to be really interesting, isn't it? And there's a lot of stuff there that we'll really enjoy looking at this weekend. It's going to be a great weekend.
Well, that's us over and out for the Talk Rugby League show for this week. A big thanks to Doug Thompson for joining us.
Pleasure.
Matthew Shaw, always a pleasure. And Martin Sadler.
Great, thanks.
And wherever you're going this weekend to watch your rugby league, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.